Before we talk about triple dip friendships and celebrating the relationships in our life, Didi asked me if I would just take some time tonight and share a little bit about myself, how I became a Christian, and how I came to do what it is that I'm doing right now, and that is being a speaker and an author. It is a long way from where I started, I can guarantee you, a very long way. As Marianne said, I am quite passionate about life. I am quite passionate about God. But those are things that I really came to later on in my life. And you know, I am an author, I am a writer, and if I had to title my life story, it would have to be My Life is an Open Book. Because it's about 15 of them, actually. For about 20 years, I have been putting my thoughts and my prayers on paper. And so to share my story tonight, I have brought along some of my very best friends, and that is my journals. I absolutely love journal writing and have done it for a very long time. Well, the first journal I ever kept is this little diary right here. And there really is a difference between a diary and a journal. A diary just pretty much lists events and that you know, where you go and what you did. But a journal is where you really share how you felt and how those things affected your thoughts and your feelings. But the first time I ever started putting my thoughts down on paper was in this little diary. And I just found it a couple years ago. And I began it when I was 10. So this is my diary from when I was 10 to 12. And interestingly enough, when I found this diary was when my daughter was turning 10. And it was absolutely hysterical to look at, because reading the words on these pages was just like hearing my daughter talk. It was uncanny. It really was. I should tell you, though, a little bit about my life up before this point. I wasn't raised in a church family. As a matter of fact, for pretty much all of my life, I've been the only member of my family that's ever attended church on a regular basis at all. And when I say only member, I mean parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, all very, very nice people, just not particularly interested in church or in spiritual things for the most part. So I pretty much have been a white sheep and what you might call a gray family. Maybe a different story than some of you, probably similar to others. But God was very faithful in that He always provided people in my life who were more than willing to take me to church with them. When I was a little girl, there was a lady down the street, Shirley Smith, and she took me to Vacation Bible School every year. And Vacation Bible School is where I learned my first Bible verse that I can still quote word perfect today. I was probably a preschooler at that time. And she took me for a couple years. When my family moved, God placed us across the street from another family who went to church on a regular basis. And I can remember that family of five loading into their two-door Camaro and inviting my sister and I to come along to church with them. And you know, I used to wonder why they fought all the time. And as I've become a mother, I thought, well, no wonder. We were like on top of each other in that car. But so I did go to church with that family for several years. And it was while I was at the church with them, I can remember sitting in a Sunday school class one morning. And you know how the girls sit on one side and the boys sit on the other, because there's no way you want to catch those cooties even in church. I can remember sitting there on the girls' side, and they were singing this song. It was a Baptist church, and they were singing this song, "If You're Saved and You Know It, Say Amen." And I remember thinking, well, I think I'm saved. I think I'm a Christian, but I don't think I've ever told God that. Now, doesn't that sound like something a 9 or 10-year-old little girl would think? You know, like, I know something and God doesn't. So I can remember while everybody else is singing this song, it dawned on me. If I say that I'm a Christian and I'm not, that's like lying to God. And that really scared me. So I can remember while everybody else was singing, I just stared down at the ground, and very silently, nobody else could hear me but God, I said to Him, "You know, God, I think I'm a Christian, but I'm not sure if I've ever told You yet. I know Jesus is, and that He died on the cross, and that He raised again 3 days later to forgive me of my sins. I had visited church enough time with other people to pick up those bits and pieces. Even though my friends were always passing notes, I guess in all the years, you know, cumulative, I heard just enough to kind of piece it together. And I remember telling Him that if I'd never asked Him into my life, that I wanted to do that right then. You know, I didn't tell anybody about praying that prayer. I didn't even know to tell anybody. I didn't know that that was important. But I can honestly tell you that I have absolutely never doubted the genuineness or the sincerity of that commitment." Well, right about that time is when somebody put this diary in my hands. So I began writing in it when I was a brand new Christian. And, you know, fairly somber, it sounds like, for a preteen girl. says on this page here on the cover, Christ is the answer. Pretty somber thought, but new passionate Christian. And if I were to title this diary, it would have to be The Life and Loves of a Preteen Girl, because all the other pages are so totally typical of a 10 to 12-year-old preteen girl. And you'll see on the back side here, in large bubble letters, I don't know what it is about little girls, but if you have one or if you've ever had one, you know that we all have a thing for those bubble letters. And on this cover, it pretty much sums up my philosophy of life. In the bubble letters where it says love, peace, and voice. That's pretty much what I thought was the most important things in life, was love, peace, and voice. And I've drawn a little flower down here. I've never been able to draw worth a flip, and so it's really too geometrical to be a flower. It only has four petals. But the center of the flower says me, because isn't that pretty much the center of your world when you're a child? You look at everything in relation to how it affects you. So the center of my world is me. And these four petals all around all have the same word, boys. Boys, 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 boys. So I guess in my, preteen years, that was pretty much what was on my mind. And I tell you, this journal has so helped me to remember what it felt like to be a preteen girl. And it has helped me so much to relate to my daughter and to things going on in her life. I remember a couple years ago when the movie Titanic came out, and, my poor daughter, she was the only girl in the world that didn't get to go to that movie. She was absolutely sure of it, but when it came out and Leonardo DiCaprio was the main actor, I mean, all the little girls were nuts over him. And Casey talked and talked and talked about him. And Mom, can I buy his poster? Mom, can I buy this picture? I mean, she pretty much wanted to fill her life up with this memorabilia from this movie she wasn't allowed to see. And I can remember thinking, she is just too young to be this boy crazy. We just really don't need this. This is not right. We don't, we just don't need to go there yet. Well, all I had to do was pick up my little diary and read about the day that I got to couple skate and hold hands with Gary Nixon at the Comet Skating Club. I mean, it is filled. I don't know how many boys I absolutely loved passionately with all my heart on these pages, And so when I read that, I remember what it felt like to be a preteen girl. I write about the day one of my favorite teachers moved and left school, and I just cried and bawled all over the page. The writing is all smudged. And, I think as adults, we know about really hard things in life. We know about things like Alzheimer's and strokes and cancer and divorce. And sometimes when children come to us with their problems, I think our tendency is to just slap a Band-Aid on it and send them on their way, because they just don't sound very serious to us. They don't sound very important. But what this diary reminds me of is that what's going on in my daughter's life is very real to her, and it's very important to her. And I am so glad that God helped me find this a couple years ago when we entered this preteen state of life. Well, God continued to provide people that took me to church off and on as a teenager. But because I didn't have a real solid church background, for some odd reason, I mistakenly felt like I was very much inferior to the rest of the kids there that were from the church families. And I can remember living in absolute horror that they would ask me a question in Sunday school and I would not know the answer. For the life of me, I could not keep straight who the people they were talking about in the Bible were. And on the days when they talked about the Old Testament, it just sounded like gobbledygook. I could not remember who was the dad, who was the son. It seemed like they used the same names over and over again. It was very confusing for me. And I can remember being so hungry to understand what they were talking about, but just not getting it. And I would have died a million deaths before I would have asked a question in class, because I would have been absolutely certain that I would have, pretty much firmed up in everybody's mind how really dumb I was and how small my lack of Bible knowledge was. So for years, I went to church feeling that way. Well, I can remember when the first day of seventh grade, I met a girl named Paula Pickle. And Paula used to spend the night with her grandmother every Saturday night and go to church with her on Sundays. So I started spending the night with Mama, Paula's grandma, every Saturday night and going to church with her. And it was through that I got introduced to church camp. And when I went to church camp, I heard a preacher say that you should read your Bible every day. Well, I am a poster born. I'm a poster child for firstborn daughters. And I pretty much, by the letter of the law, do what it is I think I'm supposed to. So I knew I was supposed to start reading my Bible every day. But I'd never seen anybody read their Bible. I had no idea what to read. So when I was about 14, I started every night before I went to bed, opening my Bible, reading a couple of verses, not understanding squat about what I was reading, closing it up and going to bed. And I did this for about 4 years before I went to college, just because I thought I was supposed to. I guess I figured soon enough it'd start soaking in and I would know what in the world they were talking about. I can remember knowing that there's no way I could understand the Old Testament. I was just sure of that. So I started with the New Testament. I started reading the book of Matthew. I read the book of Matthew and I started reading the book of Mark. And I thought, what is wrong with this guy? These are all the same stories that the guy before talked about. And I read Matthew, Mark, and then I went to Luke, and there was another guy telling the same stories again. And they would, you know, some of the words would be different, and I seriously, literally thought that's what the entire Bible was about the same 12 stories told over and over and over again. Except that every once in a while somebody would throw in an Abraham kind of name, and I knew these guys were not writing about him. So I can remember just being really lost. Well, when I became a Christian, went to college, is when my world dramatically changed. As Mary Ann said, I got involved in a college ministry at the Baptist Student Union at the University of Oklahoma. And for the first time in my life, I met people who wanted to grow as much as I wanted to grow. I met people who were just as interested in learning how to study the Bible on their own. And I believe, without a shadow of a doubt, that the best gift anyone has ever given me was teaching me how to read and study the Bible on my own. We were taught how to ask specific questions when we had a daily devotional time so that we could apply that book to our lives, and it absolutely transformed my world. It was like going from black and white to full living color. It really made a major difference, and that's really why I stand here today. That is why I am so passionate. I know that there are people, that our churches are filled with people who think being a Christian is just about going to church and being a good person. And I know now what they're missing out on. And it so pains me to know that they know nothing about having an intimate personal relationship with God. And if that is something that you have never experienced in your life, I very much hope that you will not leave this retreat without figuring out how to have that for yourself. And there are several of us that would be available at any time to talk to you about that. Absolutely. Well, this journal was put in my hands at that time because when I went to college, I was taught that when you open the Bible, you're to come with a spirit of expectancy. And part of having a spirit of expectancy they had was believing that God had something so important to say to you that it was worth writing down. And as my friend Lynn Morrissey says, if it's worth remembering, it's worth recording. And so I was given a journal and told to journal my daily devotional or my daily quiet time. And so that's why I started journaling in the very beginning. It was to try to relate what I was reading to my own life. And I will share several reasons with you tonight why I love to journal. And that is the first reason that I began journaling was to try to relate what I felt like God was saying in His Word to my life so that I could apply it. And this journal pretty much all the way through consistently has me picking out a key verse every day when I read. And I write that verse on the top of my page, and then I write a couple paragraphs about, you know, how it impresses me and what I feel like God's trying to tell me with that verse. And that's how I began journaling. And this was a huge time of spiritual growth for me. And really, I just can't impress what a difference it made in my life. Well, the next journal I began keeping is this one right here. And you'll see there is no rhyme or reason to these books. They're all different shapes, sizes, colors. This one was given to me by my friend Lisa Harris. And the only thing they have in common is that they were all blank pages before my pen got a hold of them. And so this is the second journal that I began keeping on a regular basis. And in this journal, I started to have a daily quiet time in the way that is my very favorite, and that is to read just one chapter of the Bible a day, to pick out a key verse, and to really ask God to speak to me through that chapter and through that verse. I very much recommend Bible reading plans. I think that is a great thing to have a systematic way to read the Bible. It keeps you faithful. It's kind of like your own little personal accountability. But I always struggled with those read through the Bible in a year plans because it was so many chapters to read. I'm a real thinker. I'm a deep thinker. And it frustrated me that I couldn't really think through that much material at one time. I don't know if I was incredibly slow or what. But even to this day, I still love to just sit down with one chapter and really soak it up and let God just wash it all over my heart. So that's what I started keeping in this, how I started keeping this journal. I started studying a book at a time, and I would read one chapter every day. If I was studying the book of John, I would read chapter 1 one day, chapter 2 the next day, chapter 3 the next day. Very easy, very manageable, but it very much helped me. In this journal is my very first prayer request about a mate. The title of this journal would have to be The Dating Drought, because this is the tale of a girl who is not dating and not happy about it. I'd had a boyfriend for about 2 years. We had broken up, and I pretty much didn't want to have anything to do with boys at that time. That's when Marianne and I got into our sweats and no makeup phase. I promptly put on about 30 pounds, chopped off all my hair, and pretty much didn't want to have anything to do with them. But then all of a sudden, I pretty much knew I was ready. The only problem was that the boys didn't seem to be ready, and we couldn't quite get on the same wavelength there. So there is a lot of whining and a lot of complaining in this journal right here to God. And a lot of pages are filled with me telling him exactly what I think he could do to make my life better and more fulfilling. I've even given him, I really thought he needed help, and I even gave him a list. Here's a list of qualities for my husband. It says, number one, he'll have to be someone I can respect. I figured that was important. Number two, he'll be very strong and protective. Number three, a leader spiritually. Number four, very considerate. Number five, loyal. And number six, please, God, let him be ornery and fun. I don't know why, but I had this huge fear that God was going to choose somebody that was just really good for me, but incredibly dull. And that really bothered me. So I asked him, please make him at least fun. You know, I want him to be loyal and all these other good things, but I want him to be fun too. So I give God this list, and I'm not showing you this list for a reason. I'll show it to you in a little while. But that's pretty much what this journal consists of, my qualities of a husband. And you know, it took me quite a while to figure out what he was trying to do to me, with me. And on New Year's Eve of that year, my sophomore year in high school, I can remember laying in bed, throwing myself a pity party. Have any of you ever thrown yourself a pity party? I can remember laying there telling God that I was, without a shadow of a doubt, the only woman in the entire state of Oklahoma who was home, not on a date, on New Year's Eve. We had quite a talk about it because I just really wasn't happy about this whatsoever. But what happened next is what happens in my daily Bible reading more often than not, and that is why I am such a huge, huge fan of reading your Bible on a consistent basis, because God continues to amaze me with what crops up in my daily Bible reading. Well, I finally whined around so much that evening that I bored myself. I have a pretty low whine quotient. I can't take whining for very long. I don't like listening to it. My kids. And so I wisened up after a while, and I realized I'll just open up my Bible and read my regular Bible reading. So I opened it up. And when I did, I opened it up to Psalm 81. And in Psalm 81, God is talking to the Israelites, who are doing a lot of whining themselves. And he is trying to get them to pay attention to them, and they will not. And so God says to these Israelites in Psalm 81, he says, "But you did not listen to my voice. You did not obey me. So I will turn you over to the stubbornness of your own heart, to walk in your own devices." And I remember reading that, and that scared me. Because for some reason, it was like God turned the lights on in my head. And I realized that if I continued to whine around to God about wanting this boyfriend and wanting this mate, that he was more than likely to give me exactly what I was asking for. And if it wasn't his plan, and if it wasn't his timing, I would have some very severe consequences to go through. I'd already been through one bad breakup. I did not want to have to do that again. Well, I was interested, so I continued reading. In about the 16th verse in Psalm 81, he begins to tell the Israelites what he would do for them if they would listen and obey him. And he says, "But if you would follow me, I would feed you with the finest of the wheat, and with honey from the rock, I would satisfy you." Well, like an eager new Bible student, I absolutely tore those verses apart. I looked up every cross-reference the Bible had. I looked up the definitions for all the highlighted words. And you will never believe what I found when I looked up the word honey. I thought it was obvious what honey was. But that word comes from a word which means a sweet, desirable substance. Well, who knew that? Here I was, scared to death that God was going to give me some dull, good-for-me man, and he was telling me, "If you'll just wait on me, I have the finest of the wheat. I have honey from the rock." So I proposed that night that I would wait on God's timing, and I would dedicate myself to becoming the woman he wanted me to be. It took me quite a while, but sooner or later, I get the picture. Now you can see when I go back to this page, I cross through this list that I gave God, and I write in the corner, "Dear God, please prepare me for your man." It did. It took some real whining to get to that point, but I finally figured out what he was trying to teach me. A second reason that I journal is really illustrated in this book, and it is for my own personal release to God. There are a lot of tear-stained pages in my journal. I mean, if you were to sit and look through them, you would think, this is the hokiest girl I have ever come across. Because they can be pretty dramatic. Like I said, they sound like my daughter talks. Psalm 62:8 says, trust in him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart to him. God is a refuge for us. And I don't know about you, but I have found God to be a safe place that I can always run to. I have found him not to be shocked or surprised at anything I have to say, at any of my fears, any of my questions, any of my doubts, any of my concerns. And one of the things that journaling has done for me, it has helped me to really pour out my heart to God. Well, interestingly enough, that I told you that about the first entry I had ever written about God's choice of a mate for me. That was on August the 4th. One of the cool things that happens in journaling that we miss when we're just living life busy and not paying attention, 2 years later, exactly on that day, in my next journal is recorded that that night I'm sitting at the head table at Alberta's Tea Room with my friend Marianne in the audience at my very own wedding rehearsal dinner, the same exact night. I cannot tell you how many things like that crop up in my journaling. Whenever I go back and look, it begins to make sense what God was doing. And then he had this great, intricate plan, and I just had no idea what was going on. And so I love that about journaling. Well, I did get to marry that fun and quality guy, Brian Banks. Truly the joy of my heart. And I really do not tell embarrassing stories, Marianne, on our girl trips. I'm telling you, I'm shocked and appalled. After I got married, I'm a year older than my husband. Okay, I'm a year and a half older than my husband. So we got married the summer I graduated from college, and he had a year of school left to go. And so we moved. So we stayed there, and I worked while he was in school. And when we were through, then we moved back to Oklahoma City, where we were both from. And a very interesting period of my life began when for 4 years I was not employed and I did not have children. I was the only one I knew that was unemployed without children for that long. And it was one of the most incredible times of spiritual growth in my life. And it was at that time that I had got to be involved in 3 in-depth Bible studies. Well, I knew that that was a little excessive. And so I would ask God, I would say, God, you know, I mean, really, this, you know, I realize this seems a little nuts. And you can just imagine what my non-church family thought. I hope she's going right over the deep end right here. You know, my parents never worried about me doing drugs, getting pregnant, slipping out of the house, but they were scared to death I would marry a missionary and be poor the rest of my life. That is why they sent me to a state college and why they would not let me go to a Christian college like I wanted to. They were so afraid I would become one of those weirdos. So here I was involved in 3 weekly Bible studies. What I did not know at the time is that God was using that time and all of those Bible studies and all of that knowledge to help me to have the ministry he allowed me to have when my children were small. When my children were born, it seems like every mom needs an outlet, doesn't it? And clearly, you guys are cropping fiends when it comes to this creative memory stuff. Some women do floral arrangements. You know, some women get really into exercise. Some women, you know, do scrapbooks. The only thing I've ever known to do is to lead Bible studies. I led my first one when I was 19, and it's what I've been doing ever since. But if you've ever been the mother of young children, you know that the last thing you have is a lot of time to prepare for Bible study. But God allowed me to use the Bible studies that I was in those 4 years before I ever had children to teach while my children were young. When they were in choir, you know, I discipled high school girls. You know, I mean, anytime there was some set program for them to be that they were getting good things out of, my church allowed me to take advantage of that time and to use it to minister to other people. It was hugely important to me at that time, and God knew that. I didn't know that's what those 3 Bible studies were for, but God did. He knew all about that and wasn't shocked at all when it happened. Well, during this time, I was allowed to take the only writing class I've ever been able to take. I had to get married to be allowed to go to a Christian college. And there is one in my hometown, and I took a writing class there, and it was one of the most thrilling times in my life. And it's in the first entry in this journal, which I see the other 2 reasons why I love to journal. And I'll read this to you right here. Up to this point, I had just been journaling my quiet times and what I read in my Bible, and this is when God kind of allowed my journaling to change a little bit. Writing, it helps me to express my thoughts and feelings and to think through things I don't understand or am having trouble dealing with. It is a form of therapy. You know, journaling is all the rage right now. And psychologists, psychiatrists, psychoanalysts, they're all recommending to their clients that they journal. Well, you know, I didn't know that at the time, but I did know that that's what it did for me. Journaling has helped me to reflect. It helps me to think. There's something about putting my thoughts on paper that helps me think through them. You know, anytime I read the book of Psalms, I'm always wondering if they're not like David's journals, because that is the way he writes. And I think it is a key to why he's called a man after God's heart, because he pours his heart out to God. I mean, when you read some of those Psalms, you're starting at the beginning and you're thinking, this guy is in trouble. I mean, he is in the pit of despair. But you'll see, if you read through the whole Psalm, after he gets all that muck and goo out, his perspective starts to change. It's like he's been able to think through it, and he realizes, and that's when he comes up with all those beautiful descriptive words for God. You are my refuge, my deliverer, my shelter. I will hide under your wings. He says, you are my Savior. You are the rock of my salvation. Beautiful, beautiful descriptions that he gives to God, and they're in the book of Psalms, which does remind me of his journal. So I do write to reflect. This past year has been the most difficult of my 25 years. This is an incredibly difficult period in our life when my husband and I lost 3 family members. It was very heart-wrenching. In just over a year, Brian and I are losing our third relative to cancer. Never before have I experienced the depth of hurting that I have recently felt. Many times throughout this year, my pen has aided me in voicing its thoughts, emotions, and needs to God. What my audible words didn't seem able to adequately express, my pen has been my true communicator. Thank you, God, for understanding and for allowing me to write. Which brings me to the last reason that I love to journal, and that is because it helps me remember things weren't worth remembering. And the night that Brian's grandmother, Grandmother Banks, was passing away, we were all in the hospital room with her, a very poignant memory in my life. I adored this woman. I was much closer to his grandparents than I ever was to mine, and she had made a significant contribution in my life. And while she was making her last sounds, I sat down in a corner in that room, and I wrote, 11 1/2 hours now spent in this golden-hued room, grandmother's hospital room. Time spent with the painful yet somewhat grateful feeling that each labored breath you take may be your last. Mixed emotions, deepest sorrow, helplessness, precious memories, comfort in knowing your suffering will soon be ending, confusion about why you have to linger, hope for all heaven has to offer you, and gratefulness for the incredible privilege of being your granddaughter. Thankfulness for all you've taught me, and questions concerning why my pain is so deep. One thing I do know, the privilege of loving you is worth the pain of losing you. To love deeply lends itself to hurting deeply. I am a highly relational gal, and because of that, I tend to get incredibly attached to the people in my life. How richly my life has been blessed by knowing you, how indescribably grateful I am for your love. Although blood is not bonded us, you have always treated me as your granddaughter. How proud I have been when you have introduced me that way. You have enriched my life with so many priceless memories, and these are things I never want to forget. And then I spend 3 pages writing down specific things I remembered her saying, specific memories I had of times we spent together, when she taught me how to make a buttonhole, when we sat in her red Cadillac eating burgers at Sonic. Just one after another. The day that she explained to me what all the pieces in her china cabinet were for, and when she pulled out a very old, very faded plate and told me it had belonged to her grandmother, and someday she wanted me to take care of that. I wrote it all down. I wrote it all down. And because of that, I can honestly tell you, I've looked back at this journal already. She's been gone about 10 years, and I've forgotten things that I wrote down. But because they're in print and written down, they are in my heart forever, because routinely I go back and I look through these journals. Not only that, not only does it help me remember those precious things, but it also helps me to introduce my children to a wonderful, wonderful ancestor who they will never know here on this earth, who they have no memories of because they weren't even born when she was alive. And so it helps me do that for her. So I do love to journal because it helps me remember. So it does. It helps me relate the scripture to my life. It helps me to release my emotions to God. It helps me to reflect or to think through things. And it helps me to remember things that I never, ever, ever want to forget. Psalm 34:18 says, "The Lord is near to the brokenhearted, and he saves those who are crushed in spirit." And I have found that over and over again in my life, and you'll see that in my journal. Well, what happens in nature Once winter is past, my very, very all-time favorite season, and that is that spring always comes. And what happened after this incredibly difficult period in our life was a beautiful, beautiful period when I became a young mother. The next journal is called When Casey Comes, because life totally changed when Casey came. She pretty much came into this world with a plan, and she's been trying to adapt the rest of us to it ever since. And this is a fun, fun journal because it has all sorts of things in it about my total wonderment about being pregnant. If I was a Little House on the Prairie woman, I would have been dead on the prairie a long time ago because my babies don't come. They just stay and get fatter and fatter and fatter. I think they're real happy with whatever they're eating in there. And they have to go in and get my babies. But because it was a planned delivery, I have the sweetest note in here that I had my husband write to my daughter. And it is just the most precious little thing, telling her, you know, I've never held a newborn baby, and I'm not sure that I'll really know what to do with you. One thing is for certain, I'll have plenty of coaches, Grandma Banks and Grandma McQuarter. You know, I've never fed a baby. You'll have to be patient with me, and please don't cry at me. I'll try to learn these things really quickly. I'm excited about watching you grow up. Our lives will never be the same once you're here, and I promise you two things. First, I know our lives will be blessed because of you, and second, we'll always love you. By the way, I plan on being a really great dad. I mean, how sweet that is. How sweet that is. Well, when I was pregnant with my first child, what happens to most of us is that I had a great shower, and I got all these fun gifts. I got a baby book. I got calendars. I got all these things to, you know, chronicalize her life. But they were really frustrating for me because they were mostly just fill-in-the-blank stuff about when she rolled over and stuff like that. And that really wasn't what I wanted to write to her about. I wanted to write what my hopes and dreams were and how much I loved her before she was ever even born. So when my son came around 3 years later, I went to the store and I tried to find some sort of book like that would help me write those things to him. And I got really frustrated because I never found that kind of book. So I finally bought two blank journals. And these are the only journals I've ever written that were meant to be read by other people. And this is Casey and Parker's journals right here. And the reason why I began doing this is pretty much summed up in this first entry of Casey's. Why am I writing? Because some time ago I realized you had grown past all the baby books and calendars. And yet I found myself continuing to marvel at your discoveries, your insights, and your development. Where can I record them, I'd ask myself. They just seem so important. Well, this little book is the beginning of the answer to that often pondered question. I am writing to ensure that I never forget the wonder and awe of experiencing the firsthand view of your growth inside and out. I would consider it a horrifying waste to lose these priceless, precious memories. I remember asking my mother over and over about things when I was a little girl, and I remember her saying, you know, I really don't remember. And I did not want to forget those kind of things. So these memories are part of you, and therefore they will remain forever important to me. Memories are a rare and lovely treasure I am writing, so I will never forget. A second reason for this book is so you will always know what you were like and how very much your life has thrilled, taught, entertained, and, yes, challenged us. Casey, you've been a bright and special blessing from the beginning of your life. May you always find a joy-filled security in knowing you have been both deeply loved and enjoyed. Writing is something I find extremely fulfilling, and it brings me tremendous pleasure to do it for you, my firstborn, my special girl. I started keeping Parker's journal. Casey was 3 when I started that, and that's when I got pregnant with my son, Parker. And so his is written a little bit differently. Every month I picked out a verse, and then all month long I just came back in it, and I jotted down things I wanted to tell him, things I wanted to say to him. And then once he was born, I continued to write in this. And I tell you, I get more thrill and more joy out of looking at these books. And my kids think it is the coolest thing in the world that they have their very own book all about them. And my son will often ask me, are you writing in my book? Is that my book? You know, and he used to ask me when he was little, when do I get to read my book? But it tells about the day we were at a Valentine tea party, and they were 5 and 2, and another little girl walked up to give Casey a hug, and Parker ran and jumped in between them and said, my sissy. Wrote about the day he stood up and peed all over the bumper pads, about birthdays and first pets, learning to sign when their cousin was born deaf. It talks about the first time Casey ever got behind a microphone and we went to lunch. Oh, my goodness. She was in first grade and she got to lead the flag salute in school. I did the mom thing. I went with the video camera, everything else. That Saturday, her and I went to lunch alone, and I asked her at the ripe age of 5, well, is there anything that you want to talk to Mommy about? Anything you want to tell me? And she said, no, not really, but, you know, I sure did like talking into that microphone. And I said, you know, Mommy really does, too. I said, a lot of people don't like that at all. I said, Aunt Dana, Aunt Denise, they would rather do anything in the world than talking to a microphone. And she looked at me with the most incredulous look on her face, and she said, why? You know, why would everybody not want all faces looking at them, you know, and their voice booming out? But it tells all about those things. It tells about the day we went to the zoo and she started crying because the lion was in the pen by himself and she thought he needed a friend. All sorts of things, and I do love, love, love those journals. Well, then we have my last journal, and this is my very favorite outside of my kids, because it really is the best and the very worst of times, and it is the one that I'm writing in right now. It's my favorite journal. It's the only one I've ever actually bought for myself, interestingly enough. When people knew I wrote, they just continued to give me these blank books. So I have all these books that don't really look like me. They're wild colors, and, you know, some of them are, I've got one that's brown suede, you know, it kind of looks like a man's kind of journal. But I just used whatever everybody gave me. But this one I went out and purchased for myself. It was a special treat for my 30th birthday. This journal is a present to myself because something in my heart longs to express itself in the written word. There are dreams and feelings so intense that their depth gets lost as they travel from my soul to my lips. So I will write about them and pray that they dance with celebrated freedom on these pages. I've often questioned God as to his hopes and dreams in regard to my writing. Is there something else he wants me to do with this beyond quiet time journals and baby books and heart-filled notes to friends? I'm not sure. But for now, my pen writes on with the sweet contentment of doing what you have for me right now. This journal is a much welcomed friend. This journal tells about one of the most horrifying things in my life, and that is when I had to go off of birth control pills. I guess I was never a hormonally balanced person, and this wreaked real havoc on my teenage years. So when a doctor put those little pills in my body, great things happened. It was like manna from heaven, and I became like a normal person. Well, you know, there's only so long you really need to be on that kind of thing, and it starts building up in your system and all of that, and I knew I needed to get off them, but I had lived in fear of the day I had to go off of those for years. And the second time when I got pregnant with Parker, it took me longer, and sure enough, each month it took, my symptoms got nastier and nastier and nastier. But when I finally had to give them up, this is the tales of the PMS dungeon right here. It is a nightmare beyond belief, and we tried everything in the world to try to take care of my body. And what started out as some bad symptoms a couple days a week ended up taking over my life about 3 weeks a month, and where I only had one good week out of the month. We tried pills, we tried exercise, we tried diet, we tried muscle relaxers, we tried pain medicine, we tried everything imaginable. They sent me everywhere and we tried everything. And I became really scared that this person was who I was going to be, that I was losing my personality. And what so scared me is that I knew the people who would get the brunt of that would be my husband and my two children, and that just wasn't acceptable to me. And this journal talks, I mean, just heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching honesty to God about this Jekyll and Hyde personality that I felt like I had, and the fear that I had that at any moment I was going to erupt and really act out to one of these people that I loved so much. And my children were just too little. They were too young. I knew they would not understand that. I knew they would think it had something to do with them and it was their fault. And then this journal writes at the best of times, and that is the blissful day that I had my hormonally balanced hysterectomy. You see before you a woman who is hormonally balanced for the first time in her life and very happy about it. I think the world would be a far happier place if we were all hormonally balanced women. That would have been my plan. I know the men in the world would be a lot happier if we were all hormonally balanced, but it was a happy day, and I continue to ask God in this journal what he wants me to do with my writing. See, I didn't know anybody who'd ever been published. I didn't even know anybody who wrote, and God kept impressing upon my heart there was something he wanted me to do, but I didn't know what to do. I've been leading Bible studies and speaking for over 15 years, but I didn't know anything about writing. I got a flyer in the mail from a seminar called Class Services, and CLASS is stands for Christian Leaders, Authors, and Speaker Service, and it is a speaker service that was founded by Florence Littauer years and years ago. And so I wanted to go to this advanced speaker training, but there was a little note in the bottom that said, there will be a writing expert on hand. Please bring your writing samples. Well, what do they mean, writing samples? 3 months before that, a Christian businessman in town had found out that I was interested in writing, and he asked me if I'd write a monthly newsletter for his employees, something with a Christian perspective that would kind of encourage them and pass along Christian principles. So I started doing this online email newsletter called One Woman's Heart, which I still do now about 2.5 years later. And that's all I had were 3 little months of this one-page newsletter. So I take these three little pages with me, and I sit down in front of this best-selling author who's supposed to be a writing expert, and oh, with fear and trepidation, I had to sit still while she just turned pages and read, and I thought, she is thinking, this is the worst bunch of gobbledygook, you know. What am I going to tell this girl? And she finally closed them up, and she said, you know, Vicki, you are a writer. She said, I want you to keep sending this stuff out and don't allow yourself to get discouraged. And as a matter of fact, I'm putting together a book right now that's a compilation of stories from a lot of different authors, and your writing is just what I'm looking for. And if you will submit up to three pieces to me, I will be more than happy to look at them. This was in April. I sent it in. In July, she called me up and said, I want to publish two of them. Well, I bawled like a baby. You just would not believe how I hooped and hollered and carry on. You would have thought that, you know, the most amazing thing in the world had happened in my home. I mean, we were all singing and dancing. It was a big time. And those are the pieces that came out in this very first book, Why Fret That God Stuff. It's a devotional book. And what do you think I wrote about? Where do you think I got my stories? They were from things I'd been writing about in my journals for years. The first things I ever had published was about my husband's grandmother, and it was about memories that I had of her. I had a piece published about the day that my niece was born, and I woke up that morning, and my regular Bible reading was Psalm 139, which says that God intricately weaves our inward parts, that he weaves us in our mother's womb. And when she was born and they cut the cord and she quit breathing and they found out she had a hole in her diaphragm and doctors started running all over the place, the peace I had that God was not shocked, he was not surprised, he was not in heaven running around throwing his hands up in the air going, oh my gosh, what are we going to do about this? That was one of the first stories that was published. A story, a simple little story about walking down the hall and finding my little boy at 2, brushing his teeth in his big boy underwear with the little muscles in his calves all flexed out, and it dawned on me, someday this kid is going to be bigger than I am. Someday he is going to hold me. So I sat there, and I just stood there in the hallway, and I took a picture with my heart, what mothers do every day. And I wrote about that and sent it in, and I'll be darned if it didn't end up in a book and the woman didn't read it on national radio. It made no sense. Well, in a two-year period, not only have my pieces come out in six different compilation books, I've just had my first request for somebody to reprint a story that I wrote. Could not believe that. And then I went with some of my speaker friends to the Christian Booksellers Association Convention. It is the largest convention of Christian booksellers anywhere. And my speaker's agency taught us how to approach an acquisitions editor like we knew what we were doing. So I left my mom clothes at home, and I, you know, put on my styling and profiling outfit. And I walked up and said, hello, my name is Vicki Banks. I'm a new author. I mean, at that point, you know, I just had two stories accepted, so I figured that would fly. I'm a new author, and I've got an idea for a book. And I sat down and I told them about this idea I had. See, when I'd been speaking over the years and sharing about my journals, what people always commented on was the ones I wrote for my children. And over, women would tell me, that is such a neat thing to do for your kids, and I love the idea of passing along a heritage, but I would never know what to write about. So I had this idea about putting together a guided journal for expectant and new moms that would help them put their love on paper to their children. Everything else on the market told about the physical development of the baby. It told about the mom's background, how much weight she was gaining when she was pregnant. I certainly did not want that in print anywhere. So I developed a proposal for this little guided journal called Love Letters to My Baby Joy, not Love Lullabies. I never... And I'll be darned if 3 months later I did not get a phone call. And after being told repeatedly in writers' conferences that 0.5% of all the books ever submitted for publication actually make it into print, this big old whopping company called me and said, we really like the idea of your book and we would like to publish it for you. And started talking to me about money and things. And that's what I was like. Fortunately for the man that called on the phone, I was not there when he called, and so it was a voice on my answering machine, because he too would be deaf right now. We celebrated. We drank milk in crystal goblets. We had, you know, oatmeal cookies on china plates. I mean, you know, my kids thought it was the coolest thing in the world because they thought they wanted the book because of them, you know, because of their story. My husband was just so proud that it was embarrassing, and I just can't even begin to tell you how I felt. Well, just this last week, my very first preview copies of my first little book, Love Letters to My Baby, came in the mail, and I tell you, show and tell was never this fun in store. An amazing thing has happened. Because my family really does like me, even though they were afraid for years I was going to be a religious freak. I've had relatives that have read all about Jesus just because they're so proud that I have things in print. And so they are reading devotion books and compilation stories that they would have never picked up at any other time. And that's got to be the coolest thing in the world right there. The first Christmas, this first book, My Fret That God Stuff, came in November. I gave it to every relative I had. Of course I did. You know, I thought it was the greatest thing that had ever happened. And they squealed and squealed and took it home and read because they wanted to see my name. They wanted to read in print. So, you know, you just absolutely never know why God has you doing what he has you doing and what purposes there are. I have totally loved journaling over the years. And like I said earlier, it has helped me in so many ways. It has helped me to more purposely study the scriptures. It's helped me to read the word and relate it to my life. It has helped me to release my emotions before God and to come to him honestly and transparently like his child, just like he asked us all to do. It's helped me to reflect and think through things, and it's also helped me to remember precious, precious, precious memories that I never, ever, ever want to forget. It's helped me introduce my children to relatives that they would never know any other way. And the hope of my heart, the most fervent hope that I have this week, is that each of you ladies would find God to be the one place where you can always go with your thoughts, your feelings, your fears, your pain, as well as your dreams and your joys. And I would really encourage you to write it on paper, because anything God impresses your heart with is worth remembering. And if it's worth remembering, it is worth recording. I'm so thrilled to be with you here this weekend and look forward to the rest of our week and to sharing with you about Triple Dip Friendships. Thank you very much.